Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the show. Doesn't look like we're on. I don't know why. Your host. Hey, we're on.
All right. Well, it's about time we finally figured out how to do a Monday show here at Seth and Sean. Just took a little bit of the work on the technical angle, but we're back on. So welcome back.
Well, I don't know. To be fair, I'm not sure if it was a technical or, for those of you not living in New York, all the subways were delayed. So we were all having trouble getting in. We are now here for an hour and 45 minutes of World Cup. Some NBA draft. Okay, a lot of NBA draft. And we go for there.
Yeah, a lot of NBA draft. But I'd like to point out that so yesterday Seth and I took in the Yankees old-timers game on top of going to the watch the World Cup. And the line of the week, it may be the line of pretty much the year as far as anybody's concerned, is by Chris Davis. So Chris Davis, who hit 58 home runs last year, 53 home runs, had what was a fantastic year. Tremendous amount of RBIs. I'm going to get the actual stats for you in a second. But needless to say, he came out of nowhere and had a fantastic year for the Baltimore Orioles. And as Seth noted yesterday, while we're watching the Orioles beat the Yankees, which I couldn't have been happier about, Chris Davis is not having a great year. Down about 230. He's got like 13 home runs. I mean, not a horrible year, but a pretty disappointing year. So Chris Davis has been benched. This is a guy that last year, hold on, I got the actual stats here. Last year had 53 homers and 138 RBIs. That's one of, remember the all-time most home runs is 70. And the most RBIs ever is 190. I keep going up. 190 in the National League, 184 in the American League. So on his benching, what Chris Davis said today is, physically I'm fine. It's probably because I've been sucking lately. That's not bad. I'd love to hear Kobe Bryant say, due to his benching, it's because he's been sucking lately. But I don't think you're ever going to get that out of Kobe.
I don't have much of a response to it. He's been terrible all year. I mean, do you think his great year last year was an anomaly?
No, I think he's got power. He's always been a tremendously gifted power hitter. He had a great year, and you know what? Sometimes you have that anomaly of the year. I mean, he's got like 13 home runs. I still think he's going to wind up with about 30 and probably 100 RBIs, but to say that he's going to hit 53 home runs again probably doesn't hold water to most people. I mean, back-to-back 50 home run seasons before, let's put it this way, before Bonds and before Sosa and before McGuire and before those idiots that took steroids, it didn't happen very often. In fact, don't think it happened except for Babe Ruth, ever. So back-to-back 50 home run seasons are not exactly the easiest things to come about. So that was just a little placating for me on the baseball. And over the next couple of weeks, we'll be having a lot more baseball because guess what? The NBA will be over. The NHL will be over. The NHL draft will be over. The NBA draft will be over. World Cup will be over in 2 weeks. There is no Olympics. So what do we have, Seth? What do we have for the summer?
My summer vacation.
Which happens to be doing what?
Baseball stadium road trip, but which will be fun. However, to talk baseball for hours at a time, not the most exciting thing in the world. So I will happily take a few weeks off here and there over the next 2 months after the draft this week. and let Mr. Palmer have some of his baseball cronies come on and host some of the shows.
That's pretty interesting. I now have cronies. I like that word. Cronies.
I figure it's not bad.
Well, that's after today the Pope excommunicated all the mobsters. So, I mean, does that mean that in my religion I excommunicate all my cronies?
I don't have the slightest idea what you're talking about, the first part.
Well, the Pope today, the Pope declared he excommunicated from the Catholic religion. And we talk about everything here on the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show, obviously. Excommunicated from the Catholic religion all the mobsters in the world. He said, you guys are not part of the Catholic religion, so don't use the Catholic religion anymore. Sorry, not a part. Now, how do you define mobster? I really don't know, but obviously we have defined crony as somebody that likes baseball that talks to me.
Well, is there anyone who doesn't talk baseball that talks to you? Do you have anyone else like that? Not really.
Well, really? Okay, we'll go there.
So, I believe I owe the United States of America an apology. In the 91st minute yesterday, as the U.S. looked like they were on their way to a triumph over Portugal, including a place in the Final 16, I turned to Mr. Palmer and said, well, you know, you laughed at me when I said that I thought the U.S. would get out of the bracket. And, you know, look at us now. And, of course, on the last kick of the game, Cristiano Ronaldo, who did nothing for 93 and a half minutes, makes a centering pass from 30 yards away that no one else in the world can do. They tie on the last play of the game. And the U.S. goes from a certainty to probably is still a solidly favored to move on, but by no means a safe tread. With Germany still needs the game because their tie with Ghana leaves them in a tie with the U.S. Plus, you have the obvious Jurgen Klinsmann going against his old team, Ghana playing a Portugal team, which I assume is going to be pretty dispirited, considering they would need a goal differential of 6 between them and the U.S. to have a chance to move on. I've heard between 65 and 75%. Now, my question for you is, I am a soccer fan, I'm more of a soccer fan than you are, and I enjoy the game immensely. How did you feel watching? I was reading from some other relatively knowledgeable sports fans that are not soccer fans how boring they found the game. I thought the game was pretty exciting. I was wondering what you kind of thought as a, you know, once every 4 years fan.
I wouldn't say that it was the most exciting game ever. I have proclaimed that soccer is a very boring sport to watch. I've been saying that for a while. I still believe that. I still believe it is more boring to me than watching golf. And for a lot of people, that is like the pinnacle of boredom, is watching golf. But anyway, I thought watching this particular game had a little bit more to do with it nationally than the game itself. So, I mean, was it an exciting game? No. It was just exciting. So, I mean, that's kind of what I'm saying.
That's fair. I mean, to me, I thought it was a pretty exciting game, actually. But my definition of exciting and your definition of exciting are obviously a bit different. I mean, to me, watching a baseball game in the middle of the regular season is the worst of anything. To be fair, I enjoy watching playoff baseball. And I enjoy watching September baseball. And as Sean and I have discussed over the years, my attention span for regular season sports is not very long. To watch a Sacramento Kings-Milwaukee Bucks game in the middle of January does not excite me. To watch a Kansas City Royal-Cleveland Indian game in the middle of July does not excite me. And I guess that's why I enjoy this so much, because it's the round robin. Every game counts. Every game matters. And to be a definitive underdog in coming into this. And you know, my feeling was that Portugal would underachieve because Portugal always underachieves. And whoever won the US-Ghana game would probably move on. And that's kind of what, that is what we're looking at. It's certainly not that definite by any stretch. But it is looking, it is still looking good for the U.S. to move on to a Sweet 16, to a Sweet 16 game, probably against Belgium. And I don't think that would be a disappointment.
If the U.S. and Germany tie, both go, right?
Yes.
That's the way it's going to work.
Yes. If the both the U.S. and Germany are tied with 4 points, Ghana and Portugal are at one, and you can only get 3 points for a victory. So if each one, if U.S. and Germany tie, they each get a point. They each will have 5 points. There's no way for Ghana or Portugal to compensate. The Germany would win the division via goal differential. It would play the number two team in Section H, which is probably the weakest section there is. I don't know who it would be off the top of my head. And the U.S. would probably play Belgium, who are a lot of people's dark horse to win the cup this year.
Right. So as long as Portugal doesn't win, as long as Ghana doesn't win by more than 4 goals, right? Because if they tie and Ghana or because the first tiebreaker is goal differential, right?
Yes.
Okay, so
and US is plus one.
Right, so if Ghana wins by more than four or more than two, it's more than two. Or Portugal wins by more than four, right?
It would probably have to – it also depends on how much the U.S. would lose by. If the U.S. loses 1-0
– it's okay, a draw.
Okay. If it's a draw, then it's meaningless. If it's a draw, then both teams move on, the U.S. and Germany. The Ghana-Portugal game is completely meaningless.
How is that possible? So if they draw, right, the U.S. gets – the U.S. would have, what, 5 points?
Yes.
Right, because they have a draw. Oh, okay. So the only way that the point differential matters is if it's a tie, if it's a loss.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so why would Klinsmann and his buddy, since they were both Germans, and I know this is the conspiracy theory, just say, you know what, let's both play for a draw here?
Because that's just not how you play. You know, the U.S. could have done that, actually. There was a good example in the qualifying. As people who follow soccer know, the U.S.'s most hated rival in soccer is Mexico. And the U.S. played Panama, and all they needed to do was have Panama win, and Mexico would have been eliminated. And the U.S. scored in the 88th minute to tie. They could have just been holding back. It meant nothing at that point. The U.S. already moved on. They scored in the 88th minute, and then they scored in the 91st minute to actually win the game. It's just not the way the U.S. plays. It's not the way Germany plays. And there was an issue about this about 25, 30 years ago. And since that point, it's been pretty closely monitored. Plus, I think Germany would like to I get the feeling they'd like to really beat Jurgen Klinsmann. I kind of get that feeling, and I think it's going to be a very difficult game for the U.S. to win.
Well, I don't think they're going to win. I think that they're hoping for a draw, and if they don't hope for a draw, they're hoping for Portugal to beat Ghana.
I disagree. I think they're hoping that they can win the game. It's not beyond reason. Ghana tied Germany. The U.S., despite not looking very good, I thought the U.S. looked much better against Portugal than they did against Ghana. The U.S. did beat Ghana. And the U.S. does have, you know, Tim Howard is a world-class talent. Clint Dempsey is a world-class talent. They do have some really good talent on this team. And, you know, the people who are claiming, well, if we had all our real athletes like LeBron James and Kevin Durant, you know, they should be playing. If they were playing soccer, we'd win the cup. It's naivete. It's stupid. You know, yeah. Although, admittedly, I'd be kind of scared of LeBron James coming one-on-one on a breakaway.
Well, Seth, I got to tell you, if we had 11 Kevin Durants in the 95th minute last night, that goal would not have gotten in. He was like, oh, what is just the goal?
Well,
couldn't get it over.
Or, well, I don't know. Kevin Durant's not a great defensive player, so I'm not quite sure that's really the analogy I want to go with.
Well played. Well, in about 10 minutes, we're going to start talking about our NBA draft. Just so you'd like to know. 760-283-0846. We're going to have a guest talking about the first pick in the draft, and that is for the Cleveland Cavaliers and where they go on their pick and what they do now that Joel Embiid is basically out of the running for that first pick. So Seth's going to call him. I'm trying to find his name. I think I deleted it. Now I got it right here.
Good job.
So, thank you. So Bob Finnan, who's the Cavaliers beat writer for the News Herald out of Willoughby, Ohio, for the News Herald, we're going to call him in about 10 minutes. So, and you can catch him. His Twitter handle is BobCavsInsider. So we'll talk to him. We'll see what the reaction is to Joel Embiid's broken foot. And, man, oh, man, did that throw a nice monkey wrench into this draft. But that's, again, in about 10 minutes.
I guess the other question is: Are we even going to discuss the LeBron's wife Instagram post?
She's going Cleveland. That's awesome. I'm in. No, I mean this stupidity. I mean, this is called. I mean, Bill Simmons says he reads people's actions, reads people's body language. This is ridiculous. Come on. I mean. She posted that she's going home for the summer. Yay. And if he shows up in Cleveland, he shows up in Cleveland. I mean, if you want to talk about anything right now, it's that Carmelo Anthony is probably not going to be a Knick much longer.
Yeah, well, that's not really exciting either way. No, I don't think most of us were under the impression, I found it interesting that Phil Jackson, a man who has never really turned down a dollar in his life, getting $60 million to be a GM and is, telling Carmelo that he should take less money to stay with a team that doesn't have second-round playoff potential. We've spoken for a while that I think Carmelo is gone. The logical fit is a Chicago, although I'm kind of curious to see how him and Derrick Rose play together. Yeah. You hear rumors about Houston. You hear rumors about Dallas. You hear rumors that him and LeBron are going to talk together. Do you think he made the right decision by leaving Chicago? By leaving New York? Excuse me.
Well, financially, he made the wrong decision. I mean, if that's what he's looking for financially, we've gone through this. I mean, he's giving up. If he just goes through a straight signing, he's given up at least $30 million over the course of the contract. For basketball reasons, yeah, he made the right deal. I mean, the Knicks are going nowhere, at least this year. This year is going to be absolutely horrible. They don't even have a first-round pick. They have one next year, and then they don't have one again. So, I mean, basketball-wise, he's made absolutely the right decision, depending on where he goes. I mean, I'll tell you one thing. If he goes and signs with the Sacramento Kings, no, he didn't make the right basketball decision. If he goes and signs with the Milwaukee Bucks, no, he didn't make the right basketball decision. Because the size of the Chicago Bulls, yeah, he made the right basketball decision. I mean, they're a bona fide contender. The question is, how do they get to fit him in the cap? Because there's a whole lot of moving around that you got to do to get him in, starting with amnesty and Carlos Boozer. And what's interesting is, if you're the Knicks, do you look for a sign and trade, even getting Carlos Boozer for 1 year? So Carlos Boozer and a first for Carmelo Anthony. Do you do that if you're the Knicks? Because remember, Carlos Boozer is only 1 year, and he's $16 million on the cap, so you're getting something. And then you are also getting a first-round pick, whether it be 16 or 18. Do you do that if you're the Knicks? I think you have to.
Why not?
I don't think it's...
You're not, the reality is you're not going to re-sign him. He doesn't want to be there. He's not happy there. The team is not going to win now. So the only thing you can really do just consider 2014-15, for all intents and purposes, a complete disaster. And start freeing up some cap room so you can do a proper rebuild. And you know this as better as well as I do, and I don't have the salaries in front of me, but I believe that everyone outside of Tim Hardaway is off the cap by the end of next year, or maybe it's in 2 years. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, Iman Shumpert is off. So everybody but Tim Hardaway Jr., yes, correct. Tim Hardaway the third. No, it's Jr. Tim Hardaway Jr. You are correct.
So, you know, Boozer is a solid player. He'll serve as one-year penance, for lack of a better term. And then, you know, his salary, $15, $16, $17 million, comes off the cap. Amari comes off the cap. And suddenly you're pretty much an expansion team.
Oh, no. You're not an expansion team, because expansion teams, believe it or not, would be worse off because they're actually saddled with salaries that they don't want. So if nothing else, Phil can go out and buy at the supermarket who he wants. He may not be able to get the best groceries. At least he gets to pick the groceries he wants rather than have 12 guys thrown on his team that he has absolutely no reason to want them.
Did you just make a Bill Parcells reference?
Yeah, I did. It was pretty well done, though. Come on.
It was quite subtle. I almost didn't pick up on it. Almost.
Almost.
Now,
almost.
So we'll have Bob Fannin from the Cleveland Cavs Drafts Insider shortly. And, you know, it's a strange time. After this, as you said, it's kind of a downside for a little while. The World Cup, while enjoyable to me, most of our listeners, if the U.S. is eliminated, will no longer have any interest. Wimbledon, no one is even remotely discussed. And you're looking at a baseball summer, which for Sean and the baseball peeps, it's a dream. For me, it means I play a lot more tennis.
Well, we are peeps, so we're going to let Seth go and call Mr. Evans, and I'm going to try and figure out how to keep us busy for a couple more minutes. So as
well,
work
I'm also
going
to try and figure out how to do this correctly since I seem to have problems with
I'll do it from my phone if you'd like. I'll do it. So you keep the peeps going, and I'll call Mr. Evans.
Okay. Do you have his information? So I finally get 2 minutes without Sean on the phone. What does one do? What do we discuss? We did go to Old Timers Day yesterday for the first time, which was interesting and a bit sad. Yankees Orioles, which is always a fun game. When I lived in D.C., you'd go to the stadium with 70% Yankee fans, and now Yankee Stadium, it's probably about 70% empty. It kind of felt like probably 30% empty and about 20% Orioles fans. But the old timers that were there, it didn't quite feel right. You had players such as Yogi Berra and Whitey Ford, which are true all timers, true all time greats. And then you kind of had the middle tier, Tino Martinez actually had his number retired, not his number retired, had it received a monument in Monument Park. Now, Tino Martinez was a nice player, but when you compared him to the first baseman of his era, he was certainly nothing special. And the idea that he would have his number, that he would receive a monument before, you know, I guess actually Rich Gossage got it the next day. But the idea that he was a nice player, nothing more, nothing less. Wasn't a Bernie, wasn't a Paul O'Neill, wasn't a Mano or DiMaggio or a Jeter or a Bill Dickey or a Frankie Lazzari or Crosetti or Tony Lazzari or Frankie Crosetti. It seems very strange to me that they would retire his number. Or would give him a monument, but to each their own. So you had players like that. And then you kind of had a lot of players that were not, I would never have considered an all-timers day. A Pat Kelly, a Scott Bradley, you know, Jesse Barfield, who hit a home run, actually.
Hey, don't mess with Jesse Barfield. Do not mess with Jesse Barfield, one of my favorite players. Seth, we do have Bob Finan, the Cavs beat writer, on the phone right now. Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Thanks for joining us. I know that times must be very busy to you. Cavs having the first pick in the draft. We're doing our NBA draft preview here on the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show, and we had to get some insight from somebody in Cleveland. My best friend lives in Cleveland. He's very, very excited. Well, Seth's my best friend, but my second best friend. He's very excited with what the Cavs are going to do. But with the Joel Embiid injury, he's kind of worried, are they going to take another Anthony Bennett? What are you hearing?
Well, I think they have three options with that, with what they can do. Draft Jabari Parker, Andrew Wiggins, or trade the pick. Really, that's their options. I don't believe they can take Embiid any longer at number one. Now, I do believe they could trade down in a draft three or four spots, pick up an asset like Thaddeus Young or someone, and then take Embiid late in the draft. I don't think that's been ruled.
Well, what do you think is the lowest point where the Cavs can trade down? Like, are they, like, at a three or a four? I mean, I've heard rumors, and you tell me what you've heard, that the Cavs have been offered Derek Favors, who is known to us New Yorkers since he was drafted by the Nets, and the five pick the one pick. And if that's the case, are the Cavs willing to move down that far? Because Favors, to me, right now, is better than anybody outside of Wiggins or Parker in this draft. And he's on a good salary. I mean, he's got $11 million for 4 years. I mean, that's suitable for a player of his caliber.
I've heard that as well. That's about as far as I've heard them dropping down. And I would seriously consider doing that. I was looking up his stats, I think, yesterday, or the 4, 13, and maybe 9. And he's a quality big. I think he's more of a center than a 4. And I might do that.
Well,
so,
one of the questions I think a lot of us have is they obviously took a chance. Anthony Bennett was not supposed to be the number one pick last year. He certainly underachieved. He did look a little bit better at the end of the season. Now, he's kind of a 3-4 combo, or a 3-4 tweener, for lack of a better term. If you're – is taking Jabari Parker, who's kind of a 2-3, or a Wiggins a 3, is it a concession that Bennett was the wrong pick at this point?
I don't think so. I think they're a little different. I think Parker's kind of a 3-4 type guy, and Bennett is more of a 4. I don't see – he struggles mightily playing 3 simply because he can't defend 3. He can't either.
Well, I think that was what my question was going to be, seeing that Dan Gilbert has made this – I mean, Dan Gilbert is off the ledge sometimes. I mean, I'm going to win a championship before LeBron, and he's trying to pacify his fan base. But he seriously wants to win next year, I mean, the playoffs. And does that mean that Parker has the edge? Because Parker is definitely the better of the players today, but defensively, Wiggins can lock down anybody right now. Parker
right,
doesn't have that ability.
Wiggins is a pretty good defender right now, and I think he could turn into an elite defender in time. I'm still kind of leaning toward Wiggins, and I heard what you just said. They do want to get back in the playoffs next year, but I think Wiggins is just going to be that good in time. You know, we talked to Bill Self, and he said that once the athleticism catches up to that, once his skill level catches up to that athleticism, you're going to have yourself just a really good player. And teams, I don't think, normally pass on these elite athletes. And I know Parker's more ready right now, but I just have a gut feel that Wiggins might be the guy. Of course, Parker, I don't know if you saw the story today that Parker, his workout in Cleveland wasn't exactly what a lot of people thought it was going to be. Chad Ford from ESPN.com suggested that he might have tanked his workout, and he doesn't really want to come to Cleveland. And furthermore, he came in here at 255 pounds into Cleveland last Friday's workout, which is like 14 pounds heavier than he was at Duke. And this guy is growing into a power forward, whether he likes it or not.
Well, if you had to pick, if you're predicting the pick, and we're doing our NBA draft preview, so let me ask you, who is Cleveland going to select with the number one pick in the draft?
Well, they're keeping things very close to the vest here in Cleveland, and they've done it this way now a couple of years. But if I'm stepping in as David Griffin's shoes right now, I'm going to go with Wiggins.
Okay, and you see. So right now Cleveland is dramatically under the cap as well. And, okay, so they take a Wiggins, and a Wiggins is a three, but they still need a great deal of scoring. I mean, scoring was a big problem with this team. They have one potential superstar in Kyrie Irving, and I still say potential because, you know what, I don't think he's there yet. I don't think he's in the superstar level, although he certainly will get paid like one this year.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he will.
Right.
Yes,
well, I think those are two questions. Number one, after Luol Deng and his, I don't know, experience, you would say, in Cleveland, A, who's coming to Cleveland? And B, is Kyrie Irving staying in Cleveland? Is he going to sign that deal? Because no second contract is ever denied, especially from a first-round pick. So is this going to be a first?
Well, if you offer him 5 years and $80 million, I can't see him turning that down. Well, and if he does, we're going to be sitting on a big story here in Cleveland because the Cavs are going to enter into trade talks if he turns it down. So it's going to be quite a summer for Mr. Irving. I think the Cavs do have a lot of scoring. Deion Waiters was about a 16-point scorer last year, and he's starting to come into his own. He still has a lot of rough edges, and I think a guy like the new coach, David Blatt, is really going to help Deion Waiters. And Bennett, they're going to count heavily on Bennett this year. He does something that none of their other power forwards can do, is shoot from distance. And he's had a great summer condition-wise, down in the 239 range. He was 241 last year at the very end of the season. And if this guy gets in top shape, which he should have done coming into camp last year, but he didn't. But if he gets in that shape, he's going to be an interesting player, because he is very talented with the ball.
Well, one of the questions, the Cleveland makes an interesting choice, taking David Blatt, really the first long-term European coach to coach in the NBA, and he was one of two names. Messina from the longtime Italian coach was the other, there's been almost a competition to see who was going to be the first to become a coach in the NBA. What's been the reception for Blatt coming in? Are the fans happy? Are the players? How are people reacting?
Well, most casual fans don't have a clue who he is, but people that are been around the league are just raving about this guy. He's you know, they're saying it's an out-of-the-box type hire. And it's not just your normal coaching retread, that's for sure. He's everyone I talked to is a very intense competitor. I mean, I saw one video online. He got so fired up during a game, his nose started bleeding. I mean, this guy is going to really get in their faces and challenge this group. And like I've been trying to say, this the cupboard is not bare here. There is talent here, and they just got to get it going in the right direction. And they think this is the guy to do it. Now, they've also hired Tyronn Lue today as his associate head coach. And I've heard also really good things about this kid.
Well, I saw the hiring of Lou, and it impresses me to a degree, but it also tells me that, to me, Ty Lue is a veteran player that's coming in and getting his first or second real coaching job. But is this a babysitter play in the fact that, you know what, there was a lot of tension. Look, I'm a Syracuse grad. I saw Dion Waiters for 2 years. I saw the tantrums he threw. I saw him leave the team under Jim Boeheim, who is one of the best coaches in America. And last year there was a lot of friction between him and Kyrie Irving. A, is there enough? Are there enough balls for the two of them? And B, does Dion Waiters even start the season on this team next year?
I think it would be a major mistake if he got rid of him. I just think he's that talented, and he can really – he's a scorer. And, of course, you know, he needs the ball to do his thing, and they're going to have a number of guys now that are in the same boat. I mean, obviously Kyrie needs the ball, and whoever they draft, number one, is likely going to be a guy that needs the ball to do his thing. So, yes, I do think he will be here. But they're going to look at, you know, some trade proposals. I mean, they want to take a run at Kevin Love. Now, you know, so does every other team in the league. We'll see what happens there. They'd like to get a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge. You know, a lot of these are pipe dreams because you just usually don't trade guys like these. But they're going to make a few runs at some of these guys. And that's why the Derek Favors thing, kind of, I keep coming back to that. He's, you know, you guys have seen him play. He's a very talented scorer. And he's a big who scores inside. And there's a lot to like about him. I would hate to give up the number one pick, but that's something I'd look at.
Now, before we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us. And we're just going to end it on one last question. And I guess you guys hear this you hear it every week, every month for the last 4 years. LeBron is potentially has the opportunity to opt out. Does anyone in Cleveland really legitimately believe he will come back?
There's a growing sentiment that he will. I'm pretty sure he is going to opt out. And they have, if they renounce a couple players, Deng, maybe Spencer Hawes, they can carve out enough cap space to sign a player like this. I think LeBron would consider it. You drop him in on this roster, and I think they are a legitimate contender for one reason, because LeBron's that good. Especially in the Eastern,
no doubt.
Especially in the Eastern Conference, they would be among the best teams, if not the best team. And you know, a lot of people, a lot of national guys, have written them off because of the Black hiring. But LeBron is a really sharp guy. I mean, I was around him 7 years here when he was here. He would sit down with Black and in 10 or 15 minutes would realize this guy knows what he's doing. And would he want to play for Doc Rivers or someone? Sure. But I think I don't think that would keep him away from coming back. Now, you know, he's moved his family home to Akron. A lot of things are kind of pointing toward this happening. They haven't ruled out
the Cavs. I just think it would be a viable option for him. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of teams going after him. But I think the Cavs are in the running, yes.
All right, Bob, thanks so much for your time. We really do appreciate it here on the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Did not expect that response. LeBron coming back to Cleveland with Dan Gil. I mean, to me, the bigger question is, will he play for Steve Blatt or for David Blatt? Will he play for Dan Gilbert after all the disparaging comments made by Gilbert after the decision? And I think all sides agree that could have been handled better by everybody. I can't see it, but he's got, you know, Bob has better access than we do. Sean,
no,
were you surprised? Were you surprised?
I was surprised. Look, it's always going to be an option, right? I mean, he's the best player in the world. If Michael Jordan wanted to go play in Milwaukee, it would have been an option. If he wanted to go play in Houston, it would have been an option. There's always a way to carve out the space for LeBron James. And Bob's right. I mean, if LeBron comes to any team in the East, they're a legitimate contender. Because look what he played on in the last five games. It was LeBron and company. It wasn't LeBron and two Hall of Famers. It wasn't LeBron and two All-Stars. Because Bosh and Wade didn't play like All-Stars. So it was the LeBron show and everybody else. LeBron and his band of married men, or his three musketeers, or whatever you want to call it. You put him and four guys on the court, and you're a contender in the East. So I agree with him that they would be a contender. In fact, they'd be more than a contender, in my opinion. They have talent on that team. Put him with Kyrie Irving so he doesn't have to handle the ball. Yeah, that would be fantastic. It would also limit the fact that he wouldn't have to play the number one defensive spot. Waiters could do that, or Irving could do that, or Jabari Parker, or Andrew Wiggins could do it. Maybe not Parker. But Wiggins could certainly do it. So, yeah, I mean, with Wiggins, let's put it this way. LeBron James was the best player on the court, right? Hands down in the finals?
Yes.
I mean, individual player? All right. But he had to do everything. So let's take what LeBron does. LeBron's the number one scorer. Okay, fine. He drives the basket. Great. He's also the number one defender. All right, well, you got Andrew Wiggins to do that, so he doesn't need to be the lockdown number one defender that takes on Tony Parker. Andrew Wiggins can do that. He doesn't have to bring the ball up because Kyrie Irving does that. He doesn't have to rebound because Tristan Thompson does that. Or Derek Favors. If you make the trade, then you don't get Andrew Wiggins, but you're seeing what I'm saying. I think there's more talent. Take away LeBron James from the Heat. There's more talent on the Cavs than there is on the Heat.
It sounds ridiculous, yeah, but it is probably true. At a minimum, it's better young talent.
Absolutely.
Because, well, let's look at Miami. Let's call it what it is. Miami doesn't have any young talent.
They're old, every single one of them. I mean, the youngest two guys on that team are Norris Cole and Mario Chalmers and Michael Beasley. So one of them doesn't have a head. One of them is stuck to the bench. And one of them's got an afro that reminds me of Kid and Play. But that's all that they bring to the table.
I mean, Chris Bosh is still, I think he's about 29. Remember, he's a 10-year veteran, but he only played 1 year at Georgia Tech.
Agreed. All right. So, but he's got a lot of minutes on his 29.
He does.
So, I mean, that's all I'm saying. I mean, if he goes to Cleveland's got more talent than most teams in the NBA. They just don't have a coach that can harness it. Maybe they do now. And they certainly don't have the wherewithal to understand how to play because, in some ways, they're all too young. Like, you can have too young of a team that needs to grow together. Maybe this team does. But we're at 7:50 and we haven't even started our NBA draft. So let me ask you, Mr. Kamens, do you agree with Bob? Is Jabari Parker the number one pick in the draft? Well, I think he said Wiggins, actually.
He actually said Wiggins.
I wasn't sure which way he was going.
Yeah, he said Wiggins. I disagree. I think they go Jabari Parker. I find it a little bit discouraging, and I actually read, I skimmed quickly how Parker apparently did tank the tryout today.
Yeah.
I find it a little confusing how someone would tank being the number one pick in the draft to go to Milwaukee. And I apologize to our Milwaukee listeners.
All six of them.
Yeah. Well, if we have six listeners in Milwaukee, I would be quite impressed. But who tanks
to
go to Milwaukee?
They all became, fans of our show when you were a Milwaukee Bucks fan last year.
Oh, that's right. How could we ever forget my immortal year as a Milwaukee Bucks fan? I still have the purple Glenn Robinson jersey.
As you should.
It is the only thing
Well, the reason why Jabari may want to go to Milwaukee is it's closer to Chicago. He's from Chicago. Cleveland's not that far away, but he likes Milwaukee better. Now, you think it's Wiggins? Hands
no,
down.
I think it's Parker. I think it's Parker.
You think it's Parker. Even with the supposed tanking, it's Parker.
Yeah. I think you're echoing,
buddy. Do you think he's a better fit?
Sean, you're echoing a little bit.
Do you think he's a better fit?
For Cleveland
For Cleveland.
No. The more I think about it, the more, what is Cleveland's biggest need? Cleveland's biggest need is a definitive number three.
Yeah.
Parker is some kind of hybrid of 2, 3, and 4. Wiggins is a straight out 3. The pick to me really comes down to how important it is for Gilbert to make the playoffs this season. Since we all remember the LeBron comments from 4 years ago. And I don't think they've been to the playoffs since. They've had a first pick 3 of the last 4 years. Sean, you're echoing a lot.
Okay. Well, I'm not saying anything, so if I'm echoing, that's the problem.
Oh, maybe I'm echoing. oh, boy.
I haven't said a word since you started. Okay.
So
I
will try moving around. But if you're building for the future, then Wiggins is the right pick. If it's more important to make the playoffs now, which to me seems silly, if you're not really going anywhere, even if you make the playoffs, then you go Parker.
Well, is that the question, though? I mean, in the East, can an 8 seed win? And I'm not so – I mean, let's assume LeBron goes back, okay? And I'm not saying he will, but let's say he does. And I understand we have 30 picks, so we have to move on. But let's assume he goes back. Is there any way that a Cleveland team, say with a Parker, could beat Miami? I'm not saying that's out of the realm of possibility. I don't think it's likely. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. Look, there's no dominant team in the East. I mean, if you put Melo on the board, that's as close as you're getting.
That's not – no, they can't beat Miami. Because I also think Miami would come back a bit more motivated from the bottom. It also depends on, does Chris Bosh come back? Is it LeBron and Wade? Is it just LeBron?
I'm saying I'm saying you bring all three back, but remember, Battier's gone, right? Anderson is gone. For all intents and purposes, Chris Anderson is gone.
We don't know if Chris Anderson is gone.
Okay, Mario Chalmers is gone. I guess
well,
what
nice,
I'm saying is if this team does not re-sign their own players, they can't go over the cap. And Mickey Arison has said his actions speak louder than words. He has not gone over that luxury tax. So who are you bringing in to supplement these guys unless they take major pay cuts? I just don't see it. I don't see how the Heat become better.
They don't become better, but they're not taking 14 steps back either. They are still the most. They still have the best player in the world. They still have an all-star in Bosch. Wade is still dangerous. You still have Ray Allen, probably. Allen just finished his second year of a 2-year deal.
Yep.
But the rumors are that Allen goes back.
Okay.
So you're still a more talented. You know, Cleveland has shown it's very difficult to imagine a team like Cleveland, which has missed the playoffs 4 years in a row and has shown absolutely no continuity. Their best player is going to be offered a max contract, probably doesn't deserve it, and still may not sign for it because he doesn't want to be there. I find it difficult to imagine that they're going to suddenly go and beat the Heat. Now, again, a lot can change in a season. But I put them to make the playoffs last year, and they let me down. I think they could make them this year, but I don't see them. They need a lot more time to gel, and maybe Black's the guy to do it. But they're not going to do it in 1 year.
So Mark Stein is reporting that the Jazz are offering Derek Favors, Alec Burks, and the number 5 pick for the number 1 pick in Jarrett Jack. I don't know how if you're Cleveland, you're turning any of this down.
Well, that's interesting, because that also may change. Because then Alec Burks is, I wouldn't say a burgeoning star at the 2, but he's a nice 2-3 complement. You have Favors is now your 4-5, along with Tristan Thompson and Moreno.
He's your 5. So Favors is your 5, Thompson is your 4. You're still missing a 3, but now you have the 5th pick in the draft to do it.
Or you go for, or there at that point, you may go for Embiid. Or you go for Aaron Gordon.
Right. No, I'm saying you have the 5th pick in the draft to use on a 3.
On a 3.
I'm saying you're getting your pick back.
Well, no, I understand that. And it really depends on how you see Embiid. And, you know, to me, if you're comfortable with Favors as a 5, which I can certainly see why you would be, then Aaron Gordon is the obvious pick at 5.
And you've solved your dilemma, right? Because Aaron Gordon's as good a defensive player outside of Wiggins as in this draft.
Yes.
So you've
and
got
then you have,
so
you then
got
you have a pretty intriguing, you have a pretty intriguing combination because you have the offensive players in Irving and Waiters. You have the defensive players in Favors and Gordon. Burks is kind of a little bit of both. Tristan Thompson is a decent player. Is a decent complement player
because he can handle the ball too. You rid yourself of the Jarrett Jack contract, which is awful, and you have young guys. I don't know how Cleveland turns this down. If this is a legitimate offer, I don't know how this is turned down. Dan Gilbert is beside himself if he turns this. If this is a legit offer, and granted, this is just Mark Stein reporting this, so we give credit to ESPN. But we need to move on. So you're picking Parker, okay? I am thinking Parker as well, but I don't think he gets picked. I think there's an actual trade. So I'm going to put Parker as the 1 as well. Can we both default to having Andrew Wiggins as number 2?
Yes.
All right. So Wiggins goes to Milwaukee. Now, I don't think there's any shot that pick gets traded. To me, there's no shot that pick gets traded. This is a 2-person draft right now, to me. And after the 2nd pick, there's a decline. It may not be steep, but there's certainly a you got 1, 2, and then everybody else. Are you in agreement with me, or do you see that the number two pick is actually in play for Moore?
No, I don't think the, number two play number two pick is in play. I think they need a three. I think Wiggins fits it nicely. This is not a team that's a championship. That's a player away from a championship. So they may look at Exum, but I doubt it.
Okay, I think they're looking to trade a guy like Brandon Knight and may find themselves getting another number one pick later in the draft, but not for the second pick. I don't think the second pick is going anywhere. Okay, so the Sixers, so now we come to the question, right? How far does Joel Embiid drop? Is the Sixers where he drops, or does he go further? Who do you have for the Sixers?
I don't think he goes to the Sixers. You had Nerlens Noel on the DL for the entire year. There's your center. Do they take him? I could see it, but I don't think so. I think they go for the kind of the 1-2 combo and Dante Exum.
I'll tell you, if that actually happens, that is a very, very poor shooting backcourt. But defensively, man, you got two guys that are over 6'5" in the backcourt, and that's, I mean, it just doesn't happen that way. I mean, most teams do not have 6'5" shooting guards and point guards. But I'm agreeing with you. I'm going with Exum as well. So the first three picks, and you're all together. Number four, New Orlando. Is this where Joel Embiid goes?
No, because, again, you have – the question is, how much longer – now, you know this better than I do. They have Vukovic.
Yep.
I mean, what does Orlando legitimately need? They need a point guard. But Exum is gone. Do they need a 3-4? A bit. It seems the pick that makes the most sense. And to me, you're looking at probably Gordon or Vonleh. And if they're going, I think either of them would be a good pick. And supposedly they're actually trying to trade up, but now offering their 4 and their number 12. I think they wait on the point guard until the second pick. And I think they go Noah Vonleh, the power forward from Indiana.
Well, we're 4-for-4 because I'm with you as well.
That's very disappointing.
Sorry. I like Vonleh. I think he is probably has the second most upside in the draft behind Mr. Wiggins. And he's a small town guy. I think he fits very well with Orlando and what they're trying to do, especially since he played with Victor Oladipo. Oh no, I'm sorry. He was recruited by Victor Oladipo at Indiana, so he has some connection to Victor. So I'm putting him on that team as well. So number five to the Jazz. Now I'm putting Aaron Gordon here. I'm putting him here for both teams. So say the Jazz draft here, I like Aaron Gordon, and say they don't draft here and they make the trade, I like Aaron Gordon. So I'm putting Aaron Gordon as number five, trade or no trade? To
trade.
The Jazz.
Trade.
Well, you think that they're trading, but where are they trading to?
I'll tell you, I think that deal we were discussing, the favors in the five for the one makes sense for Utah
and
for Cleveland. It just makes too much sense.
The only way
we all know that Utah.
The only way that this doesn't work is if Dan Gilbert says, "I want the number one pick," and that's it. No, we're not trading it because I want the number one pick. I think that's penny-wise and pound-foolish.
Well, that won't be the first time that Dan Gilbert has done that as the owner of the Cavs.
Look, he fired Mike Brown 1 year into a 5-year contract. So, yeah, I got it. All right, so go on. So you like Aaron Gordon here as well, whether it's a trade or non-trade.
I really don't. I think Utah tries to re-sign Hayward.
Yeah.
And I'm very iffy on Gordon here. I see Gordon more as on the Celtics at 6. But the reality is, with Embiid out, I guess everyone really kind of moves up a spot. So I guess I very reluctantly agree with you that Gordon goes at five to Utah.
Let's look at this from a Jazz standpoint. Say the Jazz, can Gordon play the four?
He's going to have to.
He's
6'9", 230.
Yep.
So the question is, if not him, do they go Marcus Smart? And that's the other option that I see. Utah is not going to go center with Embiid and Kufis. They're not going to – what do they need? They need a point guard? Or they need another guard to play with Alec Burke with Trey Burke. And they need a four. So you can go Gordon or Randall, and Randall is falling down this draft because of his foot. So I pretty reluctantly have to go with Gordon at five here.
Okay, but I'm trying to understand. If Alec Burks is still on that team, right, and they still have Marvin Williams, that I think they're set at the two, and they're set at the one. I mean, are they all-stars? No, but they're good players. So are you protecting yourself against Enes Kanter maybe leaving after next year? He's going to be a restricted free agent next year. He really hasn't done very much. And you're setting yourself up again. So you re-sign Hayward. Even if you play Howard, even if you somehow I'm going to get Aaron Gordon's last name right because I think I've called him like four different words.
I think you have two.
Yeah. So if Aaron Gordon can be like a swing 3-4 guy and back up both spots, that seems like the right play to start and then move him into the starting lineup in a year or two. I mean,
no, it does make sense. And, you know, the comparisons we keep hearing are Sean Marion.
And Blake Griffin.
And Blake Griffin, who is a definitive four. Marion's more of a 3-4 combo. So it does make sense.
Yeah. So, okay. So moving on. And we will have Nabate Isles, the esteemed Nabate Isles, who is our dog and we're his cats, on the show at around 8:30. So he'll be calling in with his sleeper picks at around 8:30. So we look forward to hearing from him. And if you'd like to call in, 760-283-0846, we are 20% through the draft at this point. And it only gets better from here because guess what? Towards the end, you don't even know who these players are. So we'll be happy to fill you in. So number six is where I have the Joel Embiid trade train stopping in Boston.
Damn. I'm not enjoying this.
You too,
I'm
huh?
not enjoying this at all. Yeah.
Sorry.
It's the only thing that makes sense. Because the next players you're looking at is Marcus Smart doesn't strike me. They still have Rondo. Unless they trade Rondo, which nobody really knows where that's going. You're not looking at Marcus Smart or Payton. You're not looking at Julius Randle because you have Sellinger and Jeff Green at the four. They have no center other than Kelly Olynyk and Joel Embiid. And Kelly Olynyk is no Joel Embiid. So we're both – so it makes sense. This is a team building for 2 years away. They can take their time with Embiid.
Yeah, I think that's number one. And number two, they have another first-round pick. So, I mean, there's that too. So they may not be able to play it this year with this guy, but they can always sell the fan base on another first-round pick. And quite frankly, when you deal with the Celtics, you don't have to sell the fan base. They're there. So having lived in Boston for 2 years, yeah, they were great. But, I mean, that team suffered some really bad years with Paul Pierce and Antoine Walker before they became good. And they still filled the stadium. So it's not as if this fan base is going away. They wait a year for Embiid. I think they do the Philadelphia 76ers tank a lot this year. And we see what happens next year. So we're past the Embiid trade. So now we're at the Lakers. So who do you got for the Lakers? With
I think at the Lakers, you're looking at two players. You're looking at Randall. You're looking at Marcus Smart. I'm a Marcus Smart guy. I think you can always improve shooting, and that's the big issue with him. A big, strong, tough point guard, good leader. I think he's what they need. I think Randall also having still some injury, some coming off the foot injury, is a bit disconcerting. I have Smart going 7 to the Lakers.
Well, we have a difference of opinion, finally.
About time.
I think Marcus Smart is perfect for the Lakers. Don't think he goes there. Because, yeah, he's a leader. Yeah, he's a guy that people are going to follow. Yeah, he's going to be the type A personality in the locker room for a team that doesn't have any more room for a type A personality in the locker room. Not whatsoever. The Black Mamba is the man. I mean, he is in Lakerland. So I don't think they rock the boat as much as they should. And Julius Randle goes here. I don't love the pick because, yeah, he's good, but, again, he's a power forward that is, like I said before, he reminds me very much of a Charles Oakley-type guy. He's just going to bang and bang and bang and bang and bang, which is really good when you have a really good team. But it's really bad when you don't have a team at all, especially without a point guard. So unless Steve Nash is – and that's the other reason why I don't think you get Marcus Smart, is because you still have Steve Nash there. Granted, Nash is not the healthiest guy in the world. But, look, he's still there. So let me ask you this. I heard this a little tidbit. Let me get your take on it. We're about a third of the way done, so we can take a little break. If the Lakers were offered Steve Nash and your 7 pick, your number 7 pick, okay, to another team for a future number 1, which would get Steve Nash's $9 million off the cap, and which would set them up with $30 million this year in cap room, do you do that and try and entice one of these big guys to come over? Or do you take your 7 pick and run with it with Nash?
I think it really depends on who's left at 7.
Let's assume that the draft plays the way it is today.
If the draft plays the way it is today, I think you have a very difficult choice. I'm actually just forgetting off the top of my head. Who took over as the Lakers coach? Or have they announced
Nobody.
It? They haven't announced it yet.
Nobody.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
the
exactly.
point. That's why the Lakers aren't naming a coach. They're hoping that their new free agent will come because I want Byron Scott. Okay, no problem. Here's Byron Scott. Now sign on the dotted line.
It's so, extraordinarily difficult to make that trade. To trade because Nash has, what, 1 year left on his contract or 2?
I believe it's 1.
You're trading this year, Nash this year and the 7? No, I'm not going to make that trade. Because then you're saying Nash is off the cap at the end of 15.
What if Carmelo says today he will be a Laker if this happens? Do you do the trade?
Yes.
What if Bob
if you
says
have,
the same thing?
If you're going to get – if this trade is going to bring in that kind of name – But to be honest,
well,
I don't see how
it would do it for. I mean, that's who you're doing it for. You're not doing it for just cap room. You're doing it to get $30 million in cap room so you can start somebody at 19 or $20 million.
Understood. And with Gasol gone, Bosch would be a logical pick, excuse me, to try and go over to try and replace him. But I don't see any of the big Lakers. I don't see the Lakers making any big signings. I don't see it.
Okay.
They have nothing really to offer except L.A., which quite nice. But you're a team that not only is a team not going anywhere, but you're not going to be able to build that much because of Kobe's ridiculous contract. And
you don't have a first-round pick next year.
And you don't have a first-round pick next year. So to me, unless the Lakers are going to be able to get some – I mean, the rumor was at one point the 7 for Klay Thompson. And
that's happening.
I don't think so either. Then I don't see it happening.
Okay. So let's move on. So number 8 to Sacramento, and this is where I got Marcus Smart on, where I think he is a perfect fit. Even if Isaiah Thomas is there, I see Isaiah Thomas as a Vinnie Johnson, a microwave guy, a guy that can come off the bench and pick and pop and do everything that you need for offensively purposes. But because he's 5'8", defensively, he's just not there. So if you have a Marcus Smart that's a 6'4 guard, 6'3", 6'4 guard playing point guard, then you have a la Isaiah Thomas or Joe Dumars, and then all of a sudden you bring in the microwave, you bring in Isaiah Thomas, who is a restricted free agent, so you're protecting yourself against that as well. He's perfect in that system. I love him for that system.
I agree. He is their dream pick. But if he's gone, the reality
is
Sacramento. I would not be surprised if Sacramento trades this pick because
They've been trying. They can't find a taker for the 8 pick.
It's not a pretty pick because you look at that team. Now, when I think of the next best, the two best players left on my board are Gary Harris from Michigan State and Julius Randle. Now, you're not going to take a power forward because you have 5 of them on your roster.
Yep.
Derek Williams, Carl Landry, Jason Thompson, Travis Outlaw. You're not going to take another power
forward.
They're
all earning good money. Yeah. I mean, you can't put another one out there.
You just drafted Ben McLemore last year to be your number 2. So Harris doesn't make any sense. I think you have to reach. And the big name that everyone has been talking about in this draft, and nobody's ever seen him play, is the point guard from Louisiana Lafayette, Elfrid Payton.
Yeah.
And he's jumped Tyler Ennis. He's, in some people's mind, he's jumped Marcus Smart. I don't see where else they can go because you have DeMarcus Cousins at the 5. You have Rudy Gay just optioned back in at the 3. You have 7 power forwards at the 4. You have to give McLemore a chance to be a 2. And I agree, Isaiah Thomas is the next generation, next decade, Jamal Crawford / Nate Robinson. So if this guy, and again, I haven't seen him play, but this makes the most sense to me.
If Smart is not there, this is the pick, the Raging Cajun. For no other reason than I like to see Raging Cajun. But I completely agree with you. Okay, so the Charlotte Hornets, FKA, the Charlotte Bobcats, the Charlotte Hornets then moved to New Orleans, to the Pelicans. Okay, so it's only one FKA. So that means formerly known as. So the Charlotte Hornets, formerly known as the Charlotte Bobcats, Michael Jordan making a pick. Who is he picking at number 9?
See, Charlotte's in a much better position because what Charlotte needs, there are 3 players right on my board and on yours that
absolutely
would work.
I only got
shooting.
One. I only got one for him.
You need shooting, which means you either look at Nick Stauskas, you look at Doug McDermott, or you look at Gary Harris.
Only got one.
And they can only pick one, or you only have one?
I only have one for them, and they can only pick one, and I don't see this guy, no matter what, going before them. So I got McDermott.
McDermott's probably where I'm thinking as well. I am more – the problem I kind of have with this is I think Harris may end up being one of the 3 best players in this draft. And it's not exactly – they need perimeter help. They have Kemba Walker. They have Phil Henderson.
Gerald Henderson.
who's a decent two. They just drafted Kid Gilchrist as a kind of the 2-3 combo. I guess you have to go McDermott and just kind of assume he becomes Kyle Korver. But I think whoever ends up with Harris has a great – does very, very well for themselves here.
Well, I think the thing about Harris is yet to stay healthy. I mean, that's the big thing about Harris. And are you willing to – I mean, if you look at Charlotte, you're going to say, okay, Adam Morrison, right? We're getting Doug McDermott. We got out Adam Morrison. They're not the same player whatsoever. McDermott is far more established than Morrison ever was. The fact is, though, to me, Gary Harris, first of all, is a smaller player who is more of a two than a three. And I think McDermott plays more of a three than a two. And McDermott, you're going to have to hide, I mean, as far as defensively. He's not a good defender. Harris actually is. But you can hide him if you have a Gerald Henderson who can play the three guy. I mean, you can hide McDermott in that Charlotte system. And trust me, if anybody can teach this guy how to play defense, it's Steve Clifford. He's in the perfect system for him. So I think that this is a McDermott pick. I don't think they even take more than 5 minutes to turn this in. I mean, this is McDermott all the way. In every mock draft I've seen, it's Doug McDermott here, every single one. Okay, the Sixers need the exact same thing that the Hornets did, correct? They need shooting.
They need everything. They need a little bit of everything.
I'll tell you right now, if Embiid falls to here, this is where he stops. Because while they may not take Embiid with the first pick, I think they'd absolutely take him with the second.
But you already have Embiid going to the Celtics, so that doesn't really help.
Right, no, agreed. I'm just saying, I think this is where he would stop if he was bypassed by the Celtics. I don't think he would get picked by the Lakers. I don't think he would get picked by the Hornets. And I don't think he'd get picked by the Kings. This is where his train would stop if it wasn't. But
agreed.
I already have him gone. So here I got either Stauskas, Gary Harris, who you know I like in this pick, or Dario Saric, who is the guy who will not play for two more years. He signed a contract with the Spanish team, and he definitely will not be coming over for two more years. This is where I'm putting him. This is where Saric goes. And the reason why is if the 76ers make the playoffs this year, they have to give away their first-round pick. If they don't make the playoffs this year, they once again keep their pick, and it becomes 2 seconds next year.
Oof.
I think they'll tank in one more year. So
well, then
I
my pick is
probably.
If that's the logic they're using, that makes an enormous amount of sense. I don't think they go for Saric. My pick for them would have been Gary Harris if Joel Embiid had stayed healthy. But because he didn't, Dante Exum falls to the three. And unless you're trading Michael Carter-Williams and moving Exum to the one, Gary Harris doesn't make sense. So at this point, what do you really need? They'll need some power guys. They're going to trade Thaddeus Young. And Julius Randle is still on my board. So yep. I'm going Randle.
Okay. And I think Randle's a good pick. And I still think they could tank the entire year with those three guys. And their own Noel. I still think they could tank the whole year. I just don't think that they will. I think this is their tank pick. And I'll tell you, if he doesn't go here, Saric's ceiling to me is 17 with the Celtics. Especially if they take Embiid. Because I think that they don't care. If they're taking Embiid, they're tanking again. Okay, so now we're on to the Nuggets. So the Nuggets, to me, need shooting. And they need a shooting, and they need a center, because JaVale McGee is just not that guy. So they could take Yusuf Nurkic. I'll never pronounce this guy. So they could take him. He's got good size, from what I understand. He's got good touch, blah, 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 everything that a European guy has. or they could take Gary Harris, which is the safe pick. Now, this team never takes the safe pick, ever. Don't understand it, but they never do. So I'm going with Nierkerk at the center position at a bottom. They also don't have a lot of money, so I think that has something to do with it. Go ahead.
That may also explain my pick. The rumor is that Saric has a promise from Denver. I'm gonna hold to that, and I am going. Even though he is staying in Europe for the next 2 years, that's why actually I do think Philly is an intriguing pick for him. I think Denver takes Saric.
And I think that's a great pick for Denver because they have too many people on their team. I think that's a great pick if he actually stays. Okay. Now, we got a half hour left. We got to keep moving because we're running out of time. We're on number 12. So number 12 is the Orlando Magic. And the Orlando Magic right now, to me, need a point guard, right? Because at number 5, I had them taking – who did I have them taking at number 4?
You have 4. You're taking Vonleh at 4.
And Vonleh at 4. This is where the Louisiana Lafayette Raging Cajun comes in. Peyton has jumped Enes. Ennis, my guy, this is where he stops. So this is where Peyton goes. You're right. They need a point guard. They need a point guard badly. And there are no other point guards except for him and Ennis. And Ennis is not – Ennis doesn't have the upside. And he's also 6 feet. Peyton's 6'4". This is where he goes.
And to me, again, you're absolutely right. You look at this team, there's a lot of young talent. There is no point guard to help Jameer Nelson. So what are you looking at? You're looking at, for me, since Peyton goes to 8 and goes at 8, you're looking at Tyler Ennis or you're looking at Shabazz Napier, who is flying up the point guard chart here. I am very hesitantly leaning toward going to take Tyler Ennis from Syracuse. Because I actually fit, he kind of fits the Jameer Nelson kind of style of play. And I think it's the best. Unfortunately, sometimes you pick need over talent.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened
here. I'm with you. They need a point guard. Okay. Number 13 to the Minnesota Timberwolves, assuming they do not make a trade. Kevin Love, who they have said is off the market until the trade deadline or at least after the draft. At number 13, I only see one position that they really need right now. They do have 2 picks in this draft. Number 13, I see being shooting guard. What do you got for them?
I think the logical pick here is Gary Harris.
Yeah, I got him too.
If Harris stays healthy, he is a superstar. And it's just a question of whether he can stay healthy.
Yeah, and I think the fact that go ahead. Well, I think the fact that Ricky Rubio doesn't play a lick of defense also plays into this. I mean, you need a big guard that can play defense. And Stauskas, while I love Stauskas, is not the defender that Gary Harris is. So I think the fact is right there, you need a defender. He's better than James Young. He's better than Stauskas. They're both great. All three of them are great shooters, but this is a place you need a defender too. And that's why I'm going with Harris. Okay, Suns at 14. Suns are just an athletic team. Every single part of them is athletic. Do they take a Zach LaVine? Do they take an Adrian Payne? Do they take a James Young? I got them going with James Young at 14.
I do too. Best probably immature, but the best upside. He makes too much sense for them. They don't really need. They don't have a specific need. So it's the most talented player available. And to me, that's him.
Yeah, I think it's either him or Rodney Hood. I mean, Hood, I think, has been going up the charts as well. I think Young is better today. I think Hood will be better tomorrow. So, but I'm sticking with Young. Okay, 15 to the Hawks. The Hawks are always a strange pick because they like to put guys like in – different countries, let's just hold them over for a couple of years, then bring them back. what position do you see this team needing? I mean, they don't need a two, right? They got Louis Williams. They don't need a one in Jeff Teague. They don't need a four in Al Horford. They could use a five, but they spent one last year on the big guy that's coming over from Brazil. They could use a three, right? I mean, where do they go here? Where does Danny Ferry look?
I think at this point, I think this is where Rodney Hood goes. As you said, you have the Brazilian coming over probably next year at 15. At center. You have Millsap, who's in the last year of his contract, and you need a more athletic player. I think James Young would have been very good here, but I think they go Rodney Hood.
See, and I don't think of Millsap as a three. I mean, Millsap's a four.
He's
right?
a 3-4 combo.
Horford's playing the five. You're right. Okay, so that's where you see that. I'm looking at Adrian Payne here. I think this is straight out of Danny Ferry's book. I need a guy that's going to spread the court a little bit, the same way that they do in San Antonio, and I want shooters, and I want a lot of shooters. So I think this is where Adrian Payne goes. Okay, so 16 to the Bulls, who could use an Adrian Payne, but he just went off the board. Again, is this a trade? They've been looking to move up. I don't see anybody that's willing to do it with them. They need a point guard. You and I have talked about this many times. If they could use a point guard, they could also use a lot of shooting from the two guard. I'm looking at Rodney Hood right here.
They need a little bit of everything. I think they could use the problem is we don't really know what Derrick Rose is at this point. You can look at a Shabazz Napier. I know that's been mentioned. You don't look at center because they don't need because they have Noah. I'm looking at kind of a combo guard, or a really good athlete, and I'm actually going to go with kind of the combo guard from UCLA, Zach LaVine.
All right. Well, who you got 17 for the Celtics? Because if Saric is here, I think Saric goes. But the question is, for me, he's not there. And he's not there for you either.
No, he's not. So is this? I think this is the place where I have the center from Bosnia, Nurkic, going. This again, this is a team. Well, actually, no, I can't because I have Embiid going at seven. So that doesn't
I was about to say, you're putting two centers on this team. Fantastic. The Twin Towers.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
I think this is a team that does need a lot of – that has a lot of help. They do need some scoring. They need some shooting. I think Stauskas here makes the most sense to me.
Okay. To me, this is where Zach LaVine stops. Again, I don't think that the Celtics are in it for this year. I think they're in it for the long term. LaVine is somebody that can grow with the team. He's not going to contribute this year. I think they're looking to tank this year, and I think it's a Zach LaVine pick. Okay. And unfortunately for the Suns, Zach LaVine just got taken because I totally think he's a guy that works for them, 100%. But unfortunately, he's not there. I have the Suns taking – who did I have them taking? Wait a second. I had Hood gone. Oh, I am so – so just messed up my draft. Sorry. I had a thought and it just went away. Oh, I had the Suns taking Stauskas. That was it. So Stauskas.
Who do you have them taking? You have Stauber taking going at 18.
Nick Stauskas at 18 for the Suns. Now the Suns have three picks and I definitely don't think that third pick is going with them. So right now I got them taking Rodney Hood. I got them taking James Young, who's a small forward. Nick Stauskas, who's a shooting guard. And then the third pick will go somewhere in Europe. Or they will sell the pick to the Knicks.
They will sell the pick to the Knicks. The problem is, they don't need much. I do wonder. I think the most logical – I mean, I don't think there's a logical pick out there with LaVine gone. I agree. I think if you – maybe what they do is if they end up losing Bledsoe or Dragic, they need a more defined two, and they look at it a guy who has kind of gone through quite a bit recently, and they look at a guy who blew up the D-League, and that's P.J. Hairston.
I love Hairston. You know that. I like him going very soon. In fact, I have him going in the next pick to Chicago. So, yeah, he's a shooter. I mean, there's no question about it. For those that are not in the know, Eric Bledsoe is a restricted free agent this year. They get a nice whopping offer, which the Suns may not want to match. Robert Sarver is not exactly the penny-wise pound. He is the penny-wise pound foolish guy who does not really spend all that much. In fact, he's known for selling his draft picks. That's why I said to the Knicks. And Gordon Dragic is up for free agency next year. So whatever Bledsoe is going to get, you know Dragic is going to want to. Moving on to the Bulls, and P.J. Hairston lands here because they need shooting. You know, it's funny. I went between Napier. Wait, I just gave them Ronnie Hood. Why am I giving them Hairston? Forget that. I'm giving them Napier. This is where Napier drops, right here, to the Bulls.
And for me, with Boozer coming off the cap next year, they need a big, strong guy. And this is where Adrian Payne goes.
And I love the pick. I love
Thank
the
you.
Pick for you.
Thank
I mean,
you.
I definitely
you.
Think Payne is definitely a guy that they look for right here. No question about it. Okay, number 20. You know what? Every single mock draft has him here. They've had him here since the start of the draft process. And I don't see any reason why he doesn't go here. He's from Canada. He's from Syracuse. Tyler Ennis lands with the Raptors. Protection from Kyle Lowry. And if not, just a point guard.
Well, to me, he makes all the sense in the world, except that I had him going seven picks ago. I think Lowry would
make more money. He makes more money for you.
I think they do go point guard. I think they go Shabazz Napier.
Okay. So here we are with the Oklahoma City Thunder, who could go any one of a thousand different ways, as far as I'm concerned. They could go P.J. Hairston because they do need shooting. They could go Mitch McGarry because they do need upfront help. They can go Clinton Capella, who is overseas from Switzerland. But I really think that they need help today, not tomorrow, today. And the guy that I like for them is Kyle Anderson out of UCLA, a guy that can do just about everything. He's not the most athletic guy in the world, but he can shoot and he can distribute and he can play with the ball while Russell Westbrook plays off the ball. So I got Kyle Anderson going here.
The bar is DL wannabe. I think it makes a lot of sense. I actually think they bring in another big scorer because I think that's what they need, and I think they kind of break Memphis's heart and they go T.J. Warren.
Yeah, I got T.J. Warren going next. I think you're absolutely right. They're breaking Memphis's heart. T.J. Warren goes next. Who do you have for Memphis now that their heart has been broken? Because they don't need a Kyle Anderson at all.
No, they need a scorer. Simply put, they need a scorer. And they need a scorer and they need an athlete. And what's his name? Prince is about 300 years old. So I'm actually going to take a bit of a reach and go with the guy who the really great player for Wichita State, Clay Anthony Early.
Yeah, Clay Anthony. Okay. Well, I think you're right. Memphis needs a scorer. I think you're right. They want T.J. Warren. I think they're going to wind up with T.J. Warren. There you go. Done. Okay, who do you got for Utah? Remember, this is Utah's second pick. So with their first pick, I had them going with – who did I have them going with? Sorry. I'm going back to my draft. It wasn't – oh, I have them going with Aaron Gordon with the first pick in the draft, in their first pick. So a small forward slash power forward. They could use a guard. I think we both discussed this. Do they go guard here?
I don't believe they do. I actually have them going. The player I kind of didn't forget about, but I haven't really found a place for him. you know, with Kanter being a disappointment, I think this is where Juris Nurkić goes.
Okay. So you think that they need another center? So that's where they're going, a big guy here.
Well,
okay.
I think there's a chance, number one, that Kanter's, that they can play favors at the four. And if not, and as you said, we're talking about him being traded. So.
Right. No, agreed. Look, I love PJ Harrison here. I just don't think that Utah will take him. I think they don't want the concept of a bad guy. I mean, it's kind of hard in Salt Lake to begin with. So I'm giving them Jordan Adams out of UCLA.
UCLA.
He is a gunner. UCLA. He is a gunner. So I'm, and you know what? If they do make that trade and they pick Parker's going to play the four, Hayward's going to play the five, and they're going to need a two. So I like him, or I like Jordan Clarkson, but I'm going to stick with Adams. Okay, so now we're off to the Bobcats,
sure,
or Hornets. Where do the Hornets go here? Now, we both have them taking McDermott early on. Oh, no, man. Yeah, we have them taking McDermott. I keep messing this up with the Pelicans and Hornets and whatnot. We both have them taking McDermott at the three, right? They have a four in Al Jefferson. Josh McRoberts just opted out but may come back. Where do they go here?
Well, it depends if you consider Jefferson a four or a five in the East.
Okay, well, that's up to you. Where are you going with that?
I am going with – who am I going with? They need scoring. They still can't – they play defense. They can't score. So what do? I think actually they go overseas with this pick. I have them taking Clint Capela from Switzerland.
Okay. So do you think Capela comes over, or do you think he stays for a year or two?
I wouldn't be surprised if he stayed a year.
Okay. I don't have Capela going here, although I do hear good things. And you're right, they need scoring. And they got a guy in the backyard that, granted, he's not exactly the he's got one of the biggest upsides in the draft. And unfortunately, because he's been on the down so long, but who better to nurse him through that than Michael Jordan? And that's PJ Harrison. So I have him going 24. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, you watched a lot more college basketball than I have. You saw him probably a lot more than I did in the ACC. I didn't see a whole lot of Harrison, but I know he can light it up. Is that a good fit?
It is. He can play the 2-3. The problem is, do they really need another 2-3? With Henderson, just bring in McDermott, Kid Gilchrist, so on and so forth. I'm not sure.
Well, I think he plays more of, if you put him with Kemba Walker, you're just shooting the lights out.
Yes.
Like, I'm seeing more of that type of deal where he comes off the bench, not necessarily him starting. So the starting lineup, I think you have Kid Gilchrist covering for McDermott, and you may have Kemba Walker. And then when you bring in the Henderson at the three, you move Harrison to the two. So Henderson's now the defensive guy. And then you have Kemba or some other point guard, Ramon Sessions perhaps, who's still on that team, at the one, and you have a good second unit. Remember, you're drafting 18 at this point. You're not looking for starting players anymore. You're looking for probably first or second off the bench.
Makes sense.
That's where I'm going with that. Okay. So we're up to 25 in the Houston Rockets. And the Houston Rockets, they just need big guys, right? I mean, there's not much else that this team really needs except the big guys. They don't need scores. They don't need a two. They kind of could use a three. But what do they really need? I mean, they don't need a five.
You need a four.
You need a four. Well, where do you go for a four?
No.
I mean, that's my big problem here. I mean, I got Mitch McGarry. I got Jonell Stokes. That's about it. As far as, I mean, you could go Nikolai Jokic out of Serbia, but he's not going to play right away. And this team is made for right away. Can Patrick Young play the four, or is he strictly a five?
He's strictly a five.
Okay, well, there's not much left on the four side then. What do you see?
I think you're right. I think they go either Stokes or McGarry. And I think McGarry's more of a health risk. I think they go Stokes. And after,
I got
in a bit of a cage well. after what happened with the marijuana. And I don't think Houston wants, after what happened with Royce White, I don't think Houston wants to deal with that.
Yeah, I'm with you. So I got Stokes at 25 as well. So here we are to 26 in the Miami Heat. Miami Heat just need a lot of everything, right? I mean, I think more for them is who plays in their system, right? Who can play off the ball and can just shoot, because, and who can probably play a little bit of point guard, because they're going to lose Mario Chalmers this year. So where do you have them going?
It seems like, as you said, it seems like they need a point guard. They just need youth and athleticism. I'm going Jordan Clarkson, the point guard from Missouri.
Yeah, you and I both went there.
We've agreed way too much in this draft.
We are, but you know what? This draft, more than any in the past, I view this draft as a need draft rather than a top player draft, because I think that the players, and you feel free to disagree with me, I feel that the players are very clumped up in talent. So you're going more for need than you ever have before.
I think that's accurate. I agree.
So, I mean, and the needs of some of these teams, when you have like only three or four players that fill that need, like it's at the 10 spot, when you have Stauskas, Harris, and McDermott, or that's the 9 spot, I'm sorry, for the Bobcats, you only got three players there. So chances are you and I are going to agree on one of those guys at some point in the list of the next three shooters, because there's only three shooters there. It's not a huge amount of shooting. So, okay, so we're moving on. We got 13 minutes to go. We're making good progress. We're on number 27, the Suns, and this is where, for me, Capella, the Suns don't have enough room for three players. They're not going to draft three players that play on this team next year, and this is perfect for them. Let's just throw him into Switzerland, let him go there for 2 years. By the time he's mature and everything else, he'll come back. And you know what? If he doesn't come back, that's okay. We won't pay him anyway.
Now, I agree the Suns are going to take someone that's not going to play for them this year. I have them taking the 19-year-old from Serbia, Nikola Jokic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we both agree that it's going to be a foreigner. Okay, so the Clippers. Now, the Clippers are an interesting situation. Do they go for a three, yet they have J.J. Redick? They don't really need very much, right? I mean, they have their center. They have their power forward. Their starting lineup's pretty set. So do they replace a Jamal Crawford at this point? Do they look to replace a Matt Barnes at this point, the older of the crew? Or do they go for a Darren Collison just opted out of his contract. Do they look for a backup point guard? I have them looking for a backup point guard, truth be told. I have them looking for KJ McDaniels. Oh, I'm sorry. That's a small forward. Yeah, I don't know why I had him as a point guard. Hold on. I'm looking for a point guard. Okay, I don't know why I had them there. Well, I'm going to relook at this, and I'm going to ask you who you're picking. No, I go ahead. They will be picking the point guard for me. I'm going to have them going with C.J. Wilcox. He's a shooting guard. That's not helping me either. Are there any point guards left, or did I just lose my mind?
There really are no point guards left.
Then I'm going for best available, and that's unfortunate. I'm going with them with Patrick Young.
You're going with the center.
I'm going with the center because I think DeAndre Jordan is going to be a liability at some point where they're going to have to take him off the court. He can't hit a free throw.
I agree. And
so I got Patrick Young going.
All right. I am actually going to take the backup point guard, who would have been a first-round pick if he hadn't torn his ACL from Colorado, Spencer Dinwiddie.
You just like
he will
name.
Have. I do like the name Dinwiddie.
Okay.
So we got two picks left. And
we got the Thunder and the Spurs. So who do you got for the Thunder?
The Thunder, I think, are going to take someone and put them overseas. I think there's a lot of ways they can go, but the reality is there's just a lot of ways they can go. I'm just trying to remember who I had them. I had them taking T.J. Warren. They already got their score. They had Steven Adams. I'd like to see them take a power forward from overseas, something along those lines. I'm going to go Damien Inglis from France.
Okay. I think, you know what, that would be the smart move for Oklahoma City. But after seeing them not use Jeremy Lamb and showing very little confidence in anybody else, Presti has always done that. He's putting Ibaka came over a year after he was drafted. He spent a year in Spain. He's always been very good at doing that. But I don't think this is the year that he does it, at least not in the first round. Maybe in the second round, because they have a couple of picks there. I think they go for more immediacy. Because this team has never replaced James Harden's scoring, ever. And I think that's a problem. I mean, if Jeremy Lamb's going to be that guy, you got to start proving it, and so far they haven't. So I think I have been taking Kyle Anderson with their first pick. And granted, he is a power forward / small forward, but I have them taking Klay Anthony early here because I still think they need to light up the scoreboard a little bit, and they haven't done it. They haven't replaced it, so that's where I'm going. Okay, so with the last pick in the draft, the first round, the San Antonio Spurs select
the younger Barres Diaw. They take Kyle Anderson.
Well, I love the pick. I just got him gone, but I love the pick. I mean, that to me is perfect for them. I have them drafting and stashing. And
you have them drafting who?
Drafting and stashing, a guy that they're not going to use this year. I don't think they need anybody. I mean, they need a small – they need a point guard because I don't think that that Patty Mills is going to come back. In fact, I think you're going to see him in a Madison Square Garden near you, especially if they lose Carmelo because then they have the mid-level exemption. But I think that they take Walter Tavares, who is 7'3". Yeah, because I think they need to prepare for the Tim Duncan being gone at some point. And I think this is it. They move Tiago Splitter over to the four, which he basically plays now anyway, and they put Tavares there. And you know R.C. Buford loves doing this stuff. And I think this is where he goes. It would either be him or Young, but I have Young gone already. So this is where he goes.
We actually have 5 minutes left. We're not going to be able to get Nabate on the phone, are we?
No, well, Nabate didn't call, did he?
No, not that I saw. I think
he didn't call.
Ah, well.
Oh, well. Nabate, my cat, or sorry, you're my dog, I'm your cat. Sorry about that. Missed you. We'll get you next time.
Well, I do think we have to talk about the really sad story, and this is like our sum up of Isaac Austin.
Isaiah Austin, excuse me.
A top 10 recruit, never really played up to that potential. And now, unfortunately, because of I think it's called Morphin disease, is the NBA is actually not allowing him to participate in the draft. He's going to be forced to retire. And it's a terrible story.
I have nothing more to say about that. I mean, he definitely underachieved at Baylor, but he was a guy that all these scouts were looking at that he had all the tools. Like, he may not have been able to put it all together right away, but he had the tools to do things in the NBA. He had the size, he had the strength, he had the hands,
It was all upstairs that he never put together. But, yeah, it's – I mean, look, I'd rather him not play than to suffer something on the court. I mean, you have that, right? I mean, you look at it that way. I'm glad that they found it out when they did. It is certainly a sad tale. And I was thinking about that today. And so Seth knows this. A couple of our listeners know this. I was a marathon runner. And all of a sudden, one day, my knees just started hurting. And they hurt a lot. And I had to stop running. And I haven't ran since. And it changed my life. Not being able to run, not being able to play sports has changed my life. But sports are not my life. Sports are this guy's profession. He's probably been groomed since he was six to play basketball. So now it's a point of, does he go back to Baylor and get his degree? And this, again, comes up with the one and done, two and done, should you be getting your degree, are you a student athlete, Ed O'Bannon situation.
Yeah,
I got to think that Baylor has to do him right and let him get it. I know he can get a degree, but more importantly, push him to get a degree at this point. So we don't hear from this 10 years down the road. Does Isaiah Thomas, Isaiah Austin, unfortunately,
right,
was not able to play basketball and now doesn't have anything.
It is. It's a bit strange. He has actually been able to apparently receive $1 million from an insurance policy. Now this is an athlete who is blind, has a prosthetic right eye, and had surgery on his shoulder, and neither of those would have allowed him to collect the insurance policy. But this disease, this genetic disorder, it is something. So even if Baylor doesn't allow him to continue as a scholarship athlete there, which he's not, at least there will be some money. You know, you suffered through your knees. I have, as my friends, my listeners know, I'm a tennis player that's had to sit out for 2 years because of tendonitis in my arms. It's not fun. And, you know, as I said, it's my fun. It's not my career. And
exactly.
So, Mike, I don't want to say my condolences, but you do really have to feel for Isaiah Austin and his family. So we've
Absolutely.
Got about 30 seconds left. So next week we'll review the draft. We'll talk more World Cup. And
we'll start our baseball.
There.
Yeah.
And
All
we'll
right.
talk about
Seth
Mount Rushmore basketball.
There you go. For Seth Gamers, this has been Sean Palmer, Seth and Sean Sports, AxeSportsBase.com. We'll check you all next week. See you, cats.
Later, dog.